Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's It's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt, and Jack Piatelli, he's a no-show, but he's here via Zoom. So say hi, Jack.
Oh, wow, Kyle. I know you miss me. I'm sorry I'm not there, but I'll be back soon. I can't wait to see you again.
I'll see you next week. It's gonna be fun. We've both been very busy at showcases. And speaking of that, we brought in a college coach. Again, it's a huge surprise. From Southern New Hampshire, we have longtime Division II coach Paul Calkins. Coach, how are we doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Yeah, doing well. Coach, we've known each other a long time. We played lacrosse together, and, you know, I was looking at your bio, and it's really hard to believe that you've been at Southern New Hampshire University. You graduated in 89, and you're going on your 35th season as the coach, and you – were the assistant coach for many, many years. I remember talking to you about, well, every year, I think I'm going to become the head coach full-time position at the school. And it went on and on and on. Finally, you got it, and where the years have gone. And it's really incredible the job you've done. You stuck it out. I don't know many guys that played at a school and have been at a school and, you know, you were working full-time and an assistant coach. It really goes to show you how much you love the school you're at.
Yeah. I guess when you look up the dictionary for patience, my name might come by, you know, stick out right there. Working full-time job, supporting family, coaching part-time. I can remember I was in the construction trade. I remember being on a scissor lift 35 feet in the air and writing a practice plan on a piece of cardboard so I can go to practice, you know, a couple hours when I get out of work. But yeah, it was a long time waiting. I always wanted to be there. I bleed blue and gold, and certainly felt like it was a spot for me to be. And, you know, patience paid off, and they finally created that position as a full-time. Just like anything, they give you multiple duties, and we're at that point now where they've taken away all my other duties and just coaching, so which is great. But yeah, waited a long time to get it, and happy to have it. So
yeah, talk about someone who is very passionate about the game, and the only way you got to where you are today, and I think that's a great message for the young coaches, you really got to love it to last and to make it.
Yeah. I mean, you're going to have your ups and downs through your career, and, you know, some good seasons, some bad seasons, but I've always had the passion to pass this knowledge. If I've got a lot of knowledge or whatever knowledge I have, pass it on and coach these young men. And it's corny, but it's like you're watching guys come in at, you know, 18 years old, and you've seen them leave at, you know, 22, 23 years old, and you see how they've grown as from a boy to a man. And you always feel like you're a part of that too, helping them, you know, make good decisions, and help them make, you know, life decisions, really. So corny as it may be, but I still love doing it. You're 35 coming up. So, man, oh, man, see if I can keep passing that on to these young men.
What is it that keeps bringing you back to coach?
I think it's, yeah, I still love. I love the game. Obviously, I haven't been able to play the game in a bunch of years, and I still watch a ton of film, whether it's just on us, our opponents. Still watch. You know, we're fortunate enough to get all the games from Division I, II, and III. I love pulling up games of, you know, a Salisbury, a Syracuse, a Cornell. Who knows? I love pulling those games up and just watching things, and still try to learn. You know, nuances of the game, you know, offensively and defensively and everything. So I still have a tremendous amount of passion for the game. So it just, every time September rolls around, you know, the guys are coming back to campus, you get excited because you know that you're about to start practice, new group of guys, you know, get those mixed with the old group that's coming back. And it's fun. It's fun to watch these guys, you know, get out there and play.
Coach, I think the first time I met you was my second year as an assistant coach ever in my career. I was at Franklin Pierce, and we arrived way too early for the game. So we went down and sat in your office, and you just kind of held court with the head coach and me at the time, and just kind of talked lacrosse. And I was like, is this normal? Is this what people do? This is not what I'm used to. I remember you being very accommodating, very confident, very much exuding, you know, your presence was always felt. And every time I've seen you coach, like, you know, you're there. You're in the ref's ear. You're stalking the sideline. You still have that passion, like you were talking about. I don't think a lot of people know the history of Southern New Hampshire, because it's gone through like a couple name changes. It's a different kind of school. It's been different divisions of play, kind of for different sports. Can you kind of explain the evolution of your university from when you were there, when it was, I believe, it was New Hampshire State, right?
New Hampshire College.
Yeah. New Hampshire College. So can you kind of walk through that process and where to where you are now?
So when I came in the early 80s, I won't date myself too much as a student, but very small New England type school. I think we're probably about 1,000 students that are on campus. We are on the campus that we currently are now, but we were only on one half of River Road. So it was a very small campus, you know, grass field. We basically had one field, all wooden structure buildings, looked like the old ski chalets that were there. But it was kind of intimate, small. And as the years went on, you could see, you know, we're going to grow. We're at 1500. Okay. Now we're about 1800. So from the early 80s to where we are now, it just continued to grow. And then when they made that, the change from New Hampshire College to Southern New Hampshire University, it created a little bit more accreditation. Becoming a university status meant a lot to President Gustafson at the time. And he did a ton of things for this university to move it forward. And when he decided to step down and President LeBlanc, who stepped in, continued that same path. So President LeBlanc is certainly an innovator in the world of higher education. And, you know, this whole online thing is blown up. I will say that, you know, it's amazing what they've done, the transformation over the last couple of years since, you know, obviously pandemic, but prior to it, is getting that online school to be as large as it is. During the pandemic, we had 160,000 people taking classes online. That's pretty amazing. And then you drive through the campus and you see every building's brand new. All those little ski chalets are down. No wooden structures. I think we got two or three buildings that are more or less human resources and things like that, offices and so on. But every building is absolutely gorgeous. And that's been a start. That process started with President Gustafson and continued with President LeBlanc. But the online school really drives a lot of that. Some people right here in New England don't even know what our campus looks like. They think we're an online school. And it's crazy. We go compete places that don't know much about our university. And they're like, oh, you guys are an online school. Well, we're not. We were originally an on-campus. You know, going from a small, you know, 1,000 student campus to where I think we're about 3,800, 4,000 right now. So it's grown and it's nothing but amazing over there.
Yeah, I can remember when the turf field was built, because I'm a local. So like, Snoo got turf. Wait, I thought that was New Hampshire College. No, they changed their name. Like all of these things happened in a fairly, you made it sound like it was gradual. It was not that gradual. Yeah. It was pretty quick how that happened. But, you know, it's funny that you mentioned people in state don't know, you know, from other places don't really know that it's a physical place. But people know the school because the reach with the online program is so vast. You know, like if I meet someone in lacrosse from across the country, like someone in California is like, I'll say I'm from New Hampshire. They'll be like, oh, do you know where Southern New Hampshire is? I'm like, yeah, it's down the road from where I live. Why? And they're like, oh, well, you know, my daughter got a degree from there. And it's like, what? And then you see like a couple commercials popped up. Tim Howard, the former U.S. National team soccer player, goalkeeper. I'm like, he's on the commercial because he got a degree from there. I'm like, what is happening? You know, I actually do get a lot of questions about snow.
Yeah, that's hopefully you got all the right answers, right? So, no, it's great. I mean, our daughter lives in California. We go out there and I'll sit and watch TV or whatever, and I'll see a commercial and I'll just start cracking up because I know it's all over the place. But yeah, you get a lot of people that ask about it. And then I always, you know, as we're out and about recruiting, we always tell guys, you've got to come to the campus because you'll be blown away. But I don't think the commercials, the pictures, even if I sent you our updated campus tour video, I don't think it does it justice until you step foot there. So incredible transformation over, you know, 10, 15 years, really. It's been amazing.
Paul, tell us a little bit about your athletic facilities. I know there's been a tremendous upgrade, and talking to some people that have visited the campus, so that you have like Division I athletic facilities, athletic centers. Talk a little bit about that.
So about five, six years ago, we opened up our new stadium. It's a $30 million complex where our main turf stadium, with the track around it, coaches' offices, locker rooms, varsity-only weight room. We opened that up. We actually were the first team to play a home game in the stadium, which was pretty awesome. There was a big ribbon cutting and everything. So the complex is all of that, plus it incorporates all of our tennis courts. So, you know, we were able to get that thing open. Prior to that, we had just the one turf field. We were sharing it with soccer and field hockey and women's lacrosse and then recreational sports on campus. So it was tough. And having just that one turf and then preseason of baseball, softball, the years in the turf. So it really was a challenge for us. Our weight room at the time was, you know, shared with the entire campus to get team lifts in there for 18, you know, programs was very difficult. So when they, you know, put together the proposal and it got approved by the trustees and everything to build the stadium, man, it was night and day. And through the whole process, they went to every coach from every program and kind of asked us, what are our wants? What are our needs? You know, everything from what do we need for our offices? What do we need for our locker rooms? What do we need for the weight room? You know, they hit everything with us. And we certainly had some input. A few things we wish we probably could have gotten, but that was hindsight. But certainly, you know, you walk in, it's, you know, there's a lot of great facilities out there. And I can speak about ours in the Northeast 10 is we're one facility where you got your head coaches that overlook the stadium. You have, you know, you come in for a day of lacrosse where you get a lift at 3 o'clock. Maybe we got film right afterwards and you got practice. You never leave that building. Sometimes you might have to lift it in another building and come back to your locker room, get dressed up, go to film, go to practice. You're going from different places, but this is everything in one spot. It's amazing what they put together for us. And we were very, very happy that they asked our input and what things that we wanted, like, you know, being able to watch film and pull up film right in our offices and not looking at it on a computer screen, but looking at it on our big screen TVs in our office and stuff like that. Meeting rooms, film rooms, you name it, it's all there. So we're certainly blessed. And it is, and that's the philosophy of our university, is to try to treat our athletes as close to Division I as possible with a Division II budget. So I think we do a pretty good job with that.
Coach, going through your roster, I was surprised. Really only 12 New Hampshire kids. I thought, you know, with the name like Southern New Hampshire, you'd be like closer to 50% there. But I I'm sure that, you know, you get out into the community, you see these games, and you have a lot of local kids, you know, expressing interest in your program. How has that changed and the ratio developed to bringing in kids from, you know, as far away as California and Florida on your roster?
Yeah, we certainly were hitting different pockets a few years ago in trying to get, you know, down into the Baltimore area where a lot of kids will come from California and Florida and the Midwest coming into that area to recruiting events. So we were fortunate to hit a few of those kids. We still look in New Hampshire all the time. There's no question. We're at high school games and state tournament games and, you know, with the club organizations here in the state, you know, they're certainly doing a great job. But we find a lot of kids in New Hampshire are sometimes looking to go away. I got an email back from a young boy the other day. He said, "Coach, I live in New Hampshire. I go to school in New Hampshire. I want to go to school outside of New Hampshire." And I understand it. It happens. But then we do see some guys that go away and come back. I mean, Ryan Osier, who we recruited heavily and, you know, ends up at Bryant and decides to come back home. And it certainly was great for us, a great addition. But we never close the door, slam the door on anybody in the state and say, "Hey, listen, best of luck. If, you know, don't work out, come on back. And, you know, we're always here. You know what we have to offer here." So a lot of kids want to go away. I don't know. Maybe they want to go to sunny areas. I'm bringing in the sunny guys to the cold weather.
Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. As a local, I was like, I need to not be here. But now, but I came back and I love it. I think that's kind of very common with New Hampshire kids. I know the kids that I coach at Hopkinton are kind of like, "Coach, I don't want to stay here. Like, I need to get out of here." I'm like, well, that's because Hopkinton's like 500 people, and you know the same people, and you see them every day. Right. But you know, there's other parts of New Hampshire that are nice, and you're kind of in that. You know, I hesitate strongly to use the word metropolitan as it pertains to Manchester, but you're very close to a lot of cool stuff in that area and one of the most, you know, populous parts of the state.
Yeah. No, there's, I always say that we're so centrally located, you know, with Manchester and, you know, guys that, you know, that are from the state know what our skiing is all about and their mountains. Not that we give them too much time to do that, but anybody outside our region, you tell them, "Listen, Manchester Airport's right there. We got everything. We're so centrally located. It's perfect. You know, you want to go to the big city of Boston, you're an hour away." So I kind of like right where we are. I think it's a great location. I think some of the New Hampshire guys, they can treat it like going away. Maybe not go home every weekend and stuff. Maybe just to drop the laundry off to mom. But certainly there's a lot to do in Manchester, that's for sure.
Coach, tell us a little bit about your program. I know you've gone on your 35th year, the conference you're in, the competition, and what the season looks like going ahead now that it seems like we're moving forward and away from the whole COVID situation.
Yeah, I think a couple of years ago, obviously we're getting the season shut down. We felt we had a strong team at that point. We felt we were going to start to make our moves within the conference. This is a tough conference. You got the Adelphi's, the Pace, the St. A's, Lemoyne's. That's a tough conference. And we felt like we were on track to kind of push and get into that top six, top five. And then obviously it shut down, right? And we come back the following year with, we kept all of our students on campus remote, which was difficult. So we didn't even get a chance to bring our really good freshman class in campus for the fall. So we're doing video stuff. We're doing virtual classroom stuff with teaching our offense, our defense, and things of that nature. But it's not the same. And when we finally got word that we were coming back for a spring season, you know, pretty much all of our competitors were already back on campus having some sort of probably fall ball, whether it be in pockets of 10 guys or six guys. They had it. We didn't. Preseason stuff comes in. These guys were on campus, so they're getting a little bit of practice time in, probably small pockets of players as well, but we still didn't have anything. We brought our guys back to campus March 4th, and we had a really talented young group of guys, freshman guys. So from March 4th to, I think our first game was like the 20th, we only had a couple weeks to really figure out, one, a lineup, two, get them into our offense and our defense and our schemes, and then go out and play St. A's off the bat. You know, so that was a difficult challenge, but I felt like at the end of that season, with a kind of a messed up schedule that we had to have, played St. A's three times, Franco Pierce twice, was a challenge for us. But at the end of the day, in the end of the season, everybody made the playoffs. We finished sixth, actually, that year. We end up having to go down to play Adelphi in the first round of the playoff race. We lost 12-9 with six. Our starting lineup, Babe, was six true freshmen and a redshirt freshman that day. And we fell short 12-9. We felt like, okay, we're making our moves. We're making, you know, strides to get to the next level. Coming into this past season, we felt like, okay, we can finish in the top six. Let's fight and try to get to be in the top four or five. Okay, that was our goal. We fell short. We finished six, but we competed with Adelphi again. We lost 10-7, which was, listen, Adelphi ran the table in the conference, and we were right there with them. And we kind of let things slip away in the second half. Had an unbelievably great game with Bentley, which is always traditionally one of those games that's going to go either way. It's who has the ball last, basically. So we felt at the end of the season, finished sixth, was another pretty good accomplishment, but didn't reach our goal. Now we got everybody back. We only graduated a couple key members this past season. I think going into this year, I think we have a really young, a good group, a good crop of freshmen coming in that are going to be contributors right away. That'll help us get to that next level. So our goal is to win and fight to be an N10 champion and, you know, get ourselves in the national scene. The outlook for the season is good because we return a lot. We return our entire offense, which is good. Two seniors coming back for their fifth year. So we needed those guys to come back. That solidifies our offense. We just got to get better defensively.
And normally, how many players do you bring in every fall?
Our goal, our target number each fall is around that 10. We'll go a little bit more. Typically, we're not going to be much lower than 10 each fall. I think that's been our target number each year. This year coming in, we're a little bit more than that. We kind of, I don't want to say over-recruited, but we just brought in a lot. We wanted to add some depth and strength to our program for we're going to be a 50-man roster, and I've never been that much. So we've always been in that 36 to 42, 43. We're going to add a few more. One was because we weren't sure what guys were going to do a fifth year. So we had to kind of weigh that all out. So, but yeah, 45 is my magic number. You know,
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message.
This fall, Quincy College in Quincy, Massachusetts drops the puck on its first ever hockey season in the City of Presidents, just 10 minutes from Boston. The Granite, as they're known, will play in the CHF Collegiate Hockey Federation against Babson, Mass Maritime, Nichols, Sacred Heart, and D3 programs at UNH and Farmingdale State in New York. The Quincy College Granite will be well coached. Kyle Robertson has been coaching regional junior teams for 20 years, and over 100 of his players have gone on to NCAA programs. Kyle's assistant is Matt Gibbons, who's been coaching at North Quincy High for 12 years and won three titles there. 3 years ago, he was the MIAA Coach of the Year. And as far as the educational part, Quincy College has a lot to offer. 37 different two-year degrees, and it's super affordable. There's even a new four-year business management degree that costs much less than other four-year schools. Want to make some history in a first-year hockey program? Now's your chance. Get more info at quincycollege.edu/hockey.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
Coach, the NE10 is, as we have said many times on this podcast, and I have written, the toughest conference in pretty much all of lacrosse, in my opinion. There's no easy wins. There's no teams that are at the bottom. And if they are at the bottom, they're not going to stay there. How have you weathered that throughout the years? How have you, you know, gone up and down and seen teams rise and fall? What is your perspective on the NE10 as a conference?
Well, I think, you know, being in this for a long time, you know, we always use Lemoyne as our staple. They're the ones that everybody strives to be. They've been consistently at the top, you know, top one or two. So we all want to try to emulate that. We've seen programs like Hayes and St. Aids has had a great, you know, success over the last few years. Bentley has always been right there in the mix of things. Our goal is always to try to be in the middle and then have some, you know, hey, listen, some of these games against the Adelphi's and Lemoyne's, you got to have a little bit of luck on your side. So, you know, we want to have some luck to, you know, maybe get to that 3-4 spot. But I think that, you know, with top to bottom, you know, you look at Assumption, you look at St. Mike's, they've got all really good players and, you know, you have to prepare for these games. The Franklin Pierce, I don't think we've gone a year against Franklin Pierce where it's been a more than a one-goal game, two-goal game, and we've had some overtime with those guys. But everybody you have to prepare for. And, you know, for us to try to maintain and try to kind of have some stability and stay about where we are and not drop much lower, we got work to do. We got to bring in the right guys, and we got to continually to find something that's a little bit better than what we're doing. I think we've been able to do that over the last couple of years. We've struggled a few years back, but I think we're on that rebound, and hopefully this is where we stay and maybe get a little bit closer to the top.
I remember in 05, you whacked us pretty good. So when I was at Pierce, so you know,
it's a long time ago.
It was a long time ago, but I will never forget it. One of those things. One of your best players ever is actually the guy that taught me how to play lacrosse in a little kind of like, I've told this story before. I didn't learn how to play lacrosse in a town league or at high school. I learned in this little rink behind Everett Arena in Concord, and his name is Mike Cesare.
Oh yeah.
And I like to describe people like they've cut, cause it's been a while, right? Since he played and graduated for you guys. But I describe him as if Tom Cruise played lacrosse, that's Mike Cesare. And him and his brothers taught me how to play in that little rink, and a bunch of kids from small towns went and learned how to play lacrosse in this kind of box environment. Can you tell me a Mike Cesare story? Cause I'm so thankful to him, and I haven't had a chance to connect to anyone that knows him, and you're the perfect guy to do that with.
So I'll tell you the story about Mike and his brothers. I mean, obviously Mike played for me, but I was very close to the entire family.
Right.
I don't know if you were ever a part of it, but many years ago, Iron Works Fields in Concord, New Hampshire, was a bunch of fields up there. And I was starting to try to get a lot of guys together. We couldn't do it on the campus at the time, but we were trying to find ways to play in the summer and not just up at Everett Arena in the box. We wanted to get some field lacrosse going.
Right.
So we stumble upon these fields in Concord, New Hampshire, and I touch base with Mike and his brothers, and and said, hey, let's start getting the word out every Tuesday night at 6 o'clock. Let's all meet at, you know, Ironworks Fields and just play a little pickup. We couldn't get the fields over at, you know, the main park where the football Concord High plays. We couldn't get those fields. So we found these little fields over there that were always maintained. Soccer nets were there. So we ended up with portable nets, bringing nets out there and lining a field and playing some lacrosse. So the story is that I always talked to Mike. You know, Mike was coming to play. Danny and his brothers were, they were kind of, I think Danny, the oldest, was at Hobart.
Yep.
The younger one was at Holderness, was looking to go to Hobart. So I always talked to him about, what do you guys want to do after, you know, you graduate, you know, college and this and that? And what do you guys want to do? They always told me that they wanted to buy a van, like a little cargo van, and they wanted to just travel and go surf. That's all they wanted to do, go surf. Well, lo and behold, by the end of that summer, they found this van from this church, all renovated, and they, you know, it was a sleeper van. So, and on the front of that van, they had a hula dancer thing, a little bobblehead thing. And those guys drove around in that van all around Concord. I cracked up. And then as years went on, all three of them got their certification for scuba diving. They all lived together in Hawaii. And I don't know if you've ever looked at their website. They got the most amazing underwater pictures of, you know, sea turtles, you name it, sharks. And I go, they did exactly what they said they wanted to do. Mike is now out of it, but the other two are still doing it. But the van story was the one that cracked me up the most, because I'm waiting for everybody to show up and here's his van. I'm like, who the heck is this guy in a van? And next thing you know, it's all three of them getting out of it with a hula dancer on the dashboard. But yeah, Mike was a great, you know, player for us. He did it against all the big dogs. He scored goals against the Lemoynes and the Delphi's when we first started playing those guys. He was little, but he was mighty. That was for sure. He knew how to get to the cage.
He was like 5'4", 200 pounds, something like that. Like he was like, he's the perfect example of, if I talk to people about, you know, body types for lacrosse, I'm like, it doesn't matter. Like if you have the skill and the will, you know, you can get it done. And he's one of the guys that I reference, especially to New Hampshire kids. Now that I'm coaching again in the state, is I'm just like, you can play. You just have to put in the work and be an athlete. Like you can't just roll up and play in college anymore. It's not how it works.
No, so he taught you how to play lacrosse?
Well, he's one of the people. Yes. Yeah, I know. Go ahead. Go ahead. No, Jack.
You're still learning how to play the game.
Still learning. I got an 040 game tonight. It's going to be dope.
I'm still learning stuff too. Don't worry, guys.
Tell us a little about the, other than the campus, what programs the school offers academically to your student athletes?
Oh man, we've kind of morphed over the last, we brought on a bunch of new programs. So a few years back, Daniel Webster had shut down. We kind of actually stepped in and intervened and kept Daniel Webster afloat for a while. So that some of those students can complete their programs and get their degree and so on and so forth. And then we brought on a bunch of students from Daniel Webster that kind of moved over to Southern New Hampshire University. But one of the big things that we got out of all of that was the ability to take on some of those programs that they had academically that we didn't have. One was engineering. We had just started a criminal justice program, but we were able to bring out some of that stuff. But the engineering, the aerospace, we took on the flight program for a while as well. So we took on stuff from Daniel Webster that has really blown up for us. Engineering is a big one right now. The criminal justice program we have is second to none. We have a lot of guys that go through that. But one of the other good programs that we took out of Daniel Webster was construction management. Hey, let's face it, in this world, construction, barbers, they're never going to go away. We're going to need those guys for forever, right? So construction management became a very popular program. We have several guys that are involved with that. As I said, criminal justice, we have a lot of guys in the criminal justice. But I think one of the most popular ones that we have on campus is sports management. There's a lot of schools that have sports management and a lot of great schools that have, you know, great programs. But what they did with our sports management program a few years back was put it in our business school, which opened many more doors at the end of the day. So it's a very popular one. There's Professor Blaze, who's a lead guy in there. He's our academic athletic liaison. He certainly has a ton of connections in the sports world for internships and so on and so forth. But yeah, that's a great program. Yeah, listen, the foundation of the school is a business accounting school. But we've certainly morphed into many different things, education programs, you know, like I said, the engineering and so on. A lot of good things there. We did take on the flight and aviation program. We kept some of the aviation stuff, but we, because the airport down in Nashville wasn't as convenient for our program, we kind of had to let the flight program go a couple of years ago. I think there's the last couple of kids are testing out of it now. So, but that was President LeBlanc's, what he called it, my next big niche. You know, he wanted that one there, but didn't hold true. So wasn't convenient with the airport. So, but yeah, there's plenty of offerings. And then I think one another great thing too is being able to take some of this stuff online to kind of move your college career a little faster along, and maybe get your undergrad in like 3 years if you take some classes online over the summer and then start your grad program in the fourth year. So there's certainly some advantages there with the online, as enormous as it is.
Coach, I'm sure you're aware, to bring it up, Daniel Webster, the dead school. I was the coach. That was my first head coaching job, and it was everything that you would expect given all the things that happened.
Yeah.
But yeah, the aviation's interesting because that was a niche to recruit for. And I think you probably had the right idea, but the problem with it is it takes up so much capital to keep going, and you need to have so much insurance, and you have to have the right safety precautions, and you have to have the right instructors to make it work. But yeah, it was pretty much a slam dunk though. If you got a kid that could play lacrosse and he wanted to do aviation, there's like Embry-Riddle.
Yeah.
And then there was Daniel Webster. That's it.
Yeah. And then go to the Air Force. That's it.
Or try to be Top Gun, you know, that's Navy. Sorry. Yeah. My Navy friends will get on me if I don't clarify that. I hate to like make all my questions be like, you've been in New Hampshire for so long. Tell me about this. But I do have to ask you, you know, how has the state come? How far has it come from the youth level all the way up to college and the various colleges in the state? How much has that progressed? Because I was talking to someone the other day, and they were like, well, where would you rank New Hampshire with, you know, in terms of talent, high school talent, with the rest of New England? And I would say three. I think it's three. I think it's behind Connecticut, Massachusetts, and that's it. Do you think that's accurate, and how much of your...
I think that's extremely accurate. You know, there's a lot of talented kids in this state. You put together an all-star team and compete with, you know, the Massachusetts and in Connecticut. I think we'd fit right in that three mark. I think you're dead on. I can remember when I first came to the state in the early 80s, you know, I come from upstate New York, Syracuse area, and, you know, everybody played lacrosse. Nobody played, you know, the baseballs and so on. And you know, very few kids played hockey. Lacrosse was your primary sport. And so, you know, every high school had it. And then when I came to the state in the early 80s, it was really rare to find, you know, you got Pinkerton and you got maybe a Nashua and a Concord, but there weren't a lot of schools. And to see the growth over, you know, all these years, and, you know, continues to grow. You see a few, you know, I didn't even know Campbell High School had a program up until recently, you know. But yeah, there's just continues to grow. And I think that's great for the sport. That's giving more opportunities for these young, you know, athletes to find their path to college. So whether it's male or female, I think that there's a lot of opportunities now in the state. But yeah, I would definitely agree with the ranking, but there's a ton of talent in this state. And I think if you did had the time to research every college roster in the country, I think you're going to find there's a lot more New Hampshire kids out there playing on college rosters than you would have thought.
Coach, you mentioned you're from upstate New York, You grew up in Baldwinsville, New York. How did you end up at Southern New Hampshire back in the 80s? I know you, and you played hockey and lacrosse.
Yeah. Yeah. So ironically, I was looking for a school where I could play hockey and lacrosse at the time. And literally, Franklin Pierce, I think was a different name, but I remember going out to the school out there looking. Merrimack at the time, I looked at Merrimack at the time, and the coach shot me down, said I couldn't make the hockey team, and I thought he was crazy. I knew I could. I actually had an offer to go to New Haven to play hockey and lacrosse there, and then it was like a week before I was ready to sign and do everything I needed to do. They dropped the lacrosse program at the time, and the hockey coach at the time was still willing to talk to me. I'm like, nope, I want to play both. So, and we came across New Hampshire College and came to the campus. You know, obviously, I probably academically needed a much smaller school like that to have some success in the classroom. So I kind of fell in love with New Hampshire College at the time. You know, interesting to have an outdoor rink for practice and everything. But I remember growing up and playing on some outdoor rinks at Schultz Park in the city of Syracuse and doing all those things there. But it was a place that gave me the opportunity to play both sports. And I didn't want to give up hockey. I loved it. But I knew lacrosse was going to be my primary sport. But yeah, they gave me an opportunity to play both here. And I made the move, you know, a little homesick at first. I mean, you know, New Hampshire was a long ways away from home. I certainly didn't know if I was going to make it through right away, but hung in there and had a great time there. Coach. And then they hired me as a coach.
Yeah.
Always an advantage.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you haven't been able to leave since.
No.
Well, let me ask you why do you stay? Why are you the longest tenured coach in Division II?
I think it goes back to that. I just love doing this. Are there days when I wish, I think it's the days when we, these long recruiting days and travel here, you're living out of a bag full of clothes and you got, you know, your back of your car looks like, you know, a wardrobe of, you know, you got your bean boots, you got your rain gear, you got your chair, you got all these things in the back of your car that live there all summer long. I think the summer months are the ones when you sit there and go, how much longer can I do this for, you know? But once the guys get back on campus and you're in the routines of practice, lift and film and, you know, having guys just come and sit in your office and chat with you, I think that's when you kind of, your energy level kind of, you know, elevates a little bit. And then you sit there and go, this is why I do it, you know? The university has been great to us. I mean, and to myself and, any coach and employee that's there, they've been absolutely amazing to us. So it's like, have I had opportunities maybe to step away and go somewhere else years ago? Yeah, but nobody wants to hire an old guy right now. But certainly this has been a great place to me. They've been great to me. I just don't see myself going, you know, anywhere else. And this is where I'll probably retire as a coach. So maybe club level in California someday, but that's it. But no, I just keep coming back because it's the passion, I believe. You know.
Do you find that you keep coming back more because of the school and the environment you work in? Or is it because you still love to coach? Or is it a combination of both?
I think it's a combination of both. And, you know, and it's also, you know, getting these young men to come here. And I talk about this all the time. We want to provide the best student athlete experience for our guys. That's the bottom line. You know, we want to win. There's no question. But if you can provide, you know, a great experience that in their 4 years, the 4 years goes by, they can look back and say, listen, my best friends are now these guys. I had an unbelievable time. Maybe we didn't win all the games that we, you know, wanted to win, but you know what? Had an unbelievable time. And I always say this is that when we come back for our alumni weekend, there's one team on this campus that brings back 60 plus guys to their alumni game, and it's our program. And I always look at that and say, we did everything right with these guys. They want to keep coming back. They want to keep supporting our program. and they're proud to say that they played for this program. So that, as corny as it may be, is a really a big piece that this whole puzzle is being a part of their lives. I've been to many, many of my players' weddings. I've gotten birth announcements of their children and stuff like that. So to stay connected with these guys all these years is amazing. I mean, some of them I still can, I mean, I coach them, but I consider them my friends. You know, a couple of my former players that coach out in California, I stay in touch with them all the time. And when we go out there to visit, I go have lunch with those guys. So, yeah, those connections that you make, those can never be replaced. And I think that that is probably the driving piece to coming back every year. I still have passion, no doubt. Love the coach. Love being on the sideline game day, getting in the referee's ear, things of that nature. But watching these guys grow and then watching them, you know, move on to their next chapter of their lives is certainly something I cherish.
That says a lot about you as a coach and as a person, your longevity. And it's really great to see, because today, especially at the Division I level, you see a lot of coaches, you know, coming and going, and you don't have the stability and the long-term relationships that you've established over the years. And that really, for me and, you know, Kyle and the guys who are in this business, is that's a big part of why we do what we do. It's because of the people we've met, people that have mentored us, the people that we've been able to mentor, and the great relationships and friendships that we have. There's nothing better than the relationships.
Yeah, no, I think that is it's something that you can never replace. I mean, those relationships are amazing. I look and I watch some of my former players on sidelines of, you know, recruiting events and things like that. I think even at Legacy, the first time I've seen Dave in a long time, and I was like, we still didn't forget who we were, you know, stuff like that. Some guys that we played club across for many, many years ago. So I still, you know, think about Tommy Farini, and I see Tommy once in a while too. You know, some old guys that we've been a part of, whether we played with them or coached them one way or another, never give that up. So that's probably why we keep coming back to this, you know, and doing what we do.
Absolutely.
Coach, what is your, I'm a rising senior. You're recruiting me. Mm-hmm. What's your pitch?
My pitch to you basically is, listen, you know, first and foremost, I want to find out what you want to study, because I don't like to go after guys and start talking to young men that, you know, they want to be,
they don't want to be they don't want to be a lacrosse player first. You want them to be a student first.
When I have guys sit in my office, I say this speech to that every kid that comes in my office, say, listen, I want you to take lacrosse or the sport off the table. Do we have what you want to study? I don't want you to settle for something. If you want to be a PE teacher, it's not the place for you, because we don't offer it. But if you want to be a criminal justice major, we have it. So I want you to walk the campus, make sure that the campus is the right fit for you environment wise, make sure we got the right academics for you. And then use lacrosse as the last piece of the whole puzzle. Listen, I'm a pretty easygoing guy. When they sit in my office, what they see is what they're going to get. And I'm a upfront, honest guy. So I want you to come to my campus, make sure that you love the campus, make sure we have what you have to study, and then we'll start talking lacrosse. But, you know, listen, I'm no different than any other coach. We want that star-studded lacrosse player, but I want the right kid that's going to fit our program, a great kid. I want a great family. We love promoting the family atmosphere with our, you know, our group. They tailgate all the time. I got parents that always become friends afterwards, after their sons are gone. So, you know, it's got to be the right fit. You don't want that, you know, that one guy that's going to, you know, cause trouble here and there. But, you know, we certainly try to find the right guy that's going to fit our program athletically, you know, and as a person himself too. So, but your pitch, Kyle, would be basically is, let's make sure we got the right thing to study first before we dive into the lacrosse piece of everything.
When does money become involved in the recruiting process for you?
I think that you're obviously going to know some kids right away, right? You know, we've been talking to a young boy right away that I know for a fact is going to be an instant impact player for us. Listen, I've been around this league enough to know that what kids are going to come in as a freshman and have an impact. So those are the guys that will kind of say, hey, listen, we know we can get you this. We're going to work to get to this number, but let's start talking with this number here. And, you know, a lot of times you get to that point, want to talk with families about being fair, right? Listen, if I give you everything I have, how can I surround you with better players, right? So I've got to make sure that I got to maximize my value. Not being a fully funded program, we're fortunate to have athletic dollars, which is great, but we got to make sure we surround you with other good players, or else you're gonna die in the water. So we want to make sure that, you know, families know that we're going to be fair, but we want families to be fair with us as well. So right away, if we know he's an impact player, we're going to talk a few dollars right away, and then we can work off of that number. But if it's a guy that we're kind of unsure about, we might say, listen, come in, you know, freshman year, let's work on what we can do, and then let's see what we can do for sophomore year, things like that. So that's the hardest part. But you're going to get some guys like that too. But numbers, right away, you're going to know. You're going to know if it's a guy that's going to impact your program, impact the conference, maybe contend for rookie of the year. Those guys you want to talk right away. You don't want to let that guy slip.
Right. And players will qualify for financial aid. And do you give merit money as well?
Well, so our president made a huge decision a couple of years ago, right as pandemic hit, to reduce the cost of higher education. He felt like it was, you know, throughout the country, the higher education costs are going through the roof. And he basically said, we are going to do everything we can. We know families, finances have changed, families, retirement money in investments have changed. So we need to change our costs. So he lowered our tuition from $32,000 down to $15,000. And then, so if you're, you know, looking at Southern New Hampshire University, you got $15,000 tuition, $13,000 on campus living, $28,000 all in. But when he lowered the tuition, what he did was he eliminated academic merit money, because most students were getting it anyway. So he kind of lowered some things and made a level playing ground for tuition across the board. So that was difficult because we lost that part of our packaging. But in the end, we saw that we were getting that and maybe a little bit more for every one of our guys. Instead of paying 32, they're paying 15. And now we can work off the 15 with some athletic dollars. So, merit money is off the table.
And now, Paul, you can get the players to support the superstars.
Yeah. So you're going to get those good players. You're going to pay some money for some superstars, and you're going to get some really good players behind them that maybe they're a local guy and just want to live at home and only pay tuition and save that $13,000 on room and board. And some guys are doing that. So it's a great way for them to help their families financially as well. So. And then our president's like, we don't want our students living in their mom and dad's basement when they graduate. They can go out and get their own apartment because they saved all that money. So student loan debt is way down. So,
Coach, my only question left for you is, can I get the key so I can come down and shoot whenever I want on the turf field?
Text me. The nets are there, and usually I can let people in as long as the field's open. Camps are going on right now, so it's a little tough to get out there.
All right. We'll work on it. Thanks for coming on, Coach. Really appreciate it.
No problem.
Paul, thank you very much. Great job.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piatelli, our producer Steve Safran, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.